Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd day of January, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, and nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. On Tuesday, U.S. cybersecurity firm Malwarebytes said it was hacked by the same group which breached IT software company SolarWinds last year. Malwarebytes said its intrusion is not related to the SolarWinds supply chain incident, since the company doesn't use any of SolarWinds software in its internal network. Instead, the security firm said the hackers breached its internal security systems by exploiting a dormant email protection product within its Office 365 security product. Malwarebytes said it learned of the intrusion from the Microsoft Security Response Center on December 15th, which detected suspicious activity coming from that dormant Office 365 security app. At the time, Microsoft was auditing its 365 and Azure infrastructures for signs of malicious apps created by the SolarWinds hackers, also known as UNC2452 or Dark Halo.
Dark Halo.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. Malwarebytes said that once it learned of the breach, it began an internal investigation of its own to determine what the hackers accessed. They said that after extensive investigation, they determined the attacker only gained access to a limited subset of internal company emails. They also performed a very thorough audit of all their products and their source code, searching for any signs of a similar compromise or past supply chain attack. They probably just did a diff on their source code. They concluded that their internal system showed no evidence of unauthorized access or compromise in any on-premises and production environments. Their software remains safe to use. Let me reiterate that. Their software remains safe to use. Malwarebytes becomes the fourth major security vendor targeted by the Dark Halo threat act. Dark Halo.
Dun, dun, dun.
Threat actor, which U.S. officials have linked to a Russian government cyber espionage operation. Previously targeted companies include FireEye, Microsoft, and CrowdStrike, with successful intrusions being reported at FireEye and Microsoft. So despite whatever rumors you may have heard, Malwarebytes as a product remains secure, even though the company's Malwarebytes email was hacked. So our poll of the week. It's soundbites.org. That is Bytes with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is Malwarebytes company, not product, was hacked. And your choices are, I've always trusted Malwarebytes. I'll start using it again. I should really start using it. Going commando, baby. And others. So far, we've got about 21 votes in the poll with I've always trusted Malwarebytes. Just edging ahead of Going Commando, baby. And of course, if you said other, please head on over to our website, soundbites.org. That's Bytes with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 23 Jan 21, Malwarebytes company, not product, was hacked. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. But if you text us, please give us enough information to answer your question.
And one thing folks don't want to do is stop using the Malwarebytes, is right, because we've told, like we've said before, you've got to have a good antivirus program. And by using Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes, you're using two different products. Even though they're going after the same thing, they both have different methods of searching your machine and rooting out all these different places where it could possibly hide. And no one software does it right as far as that aspect. So that's why we still recommend running both of them.
Right. Exactly right.
That's a little embarrassing for an anti-malware company to get hacked.
Yes.
A little worse if it was a security company.
Well, yeah. Yes. And that's why they were so quick to say, well, first, why do they even have a dormant? Never mind. That's a separate issue. But
That's Joe. He's gone now. We had to fire him.
Exactly.
He is no longer with the company.
Right, right. But whatever that dormant Office 365 product was, I hope they've, and that's, I guess, part of the problem. You think, well, nobody's using this. We don't have to rush to update it, yeah. I guess. But at least they did. First, they owned up to it, which a lot of companies don't do.
That's a big step right there.
That's a big step right there. Secondly, they're very adamant about the fact that it wasn't in their product, just in the email to their company. And if they did a full audit of all their software and all their source code and everything else, my assumption is they checked the source code and then recompiled everything.
You'd like?
So, yeah. So, and I hope they check their compiler. But at any rate, that's the deal right there. That's where that stands. So if you've been hearing rumors, and they're everywhere right now, rest assured that at least as far as what Malwarebytes will tell us, their software is fine and life goes on.
That's their story and they're sticking to it.
All right. We should probably get to the phones. Our first caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Hi. I've got two questions. And the first one is, I wonder if you could suggest a product alternative to Zoom. I find it a very mediocre product. The sound quality is screechy, scratchy. And this is the situation I'm in. I'm on a board of a condo, and we'd like to have a meeting with as many as over 25 people, and in Zoom conferences I've had with much smaller groups, there's a lot of screen freezing, and the sound quality is very poor, and only one person can talk at a time. It's, as you pointed out, it's a pretty, it's very inexpensive, and it's easy to download, and that's made it popular. But I wonder if you could suggest some alternatives I could check out on the internet to see if I could try having a big meeting with a different product. There are a lot of issues. People would be doing it on their own machines and their own apartments. And as you know, computers vary a lot in what they can do. Could you suggest some better products I might try?
Go to meeting.
Well,
hold on. The first thing you should probably do is head over to my website at asknick.com.
Okay.
Because there's a I put up a page.
Okay.
It's asknick.com/videochat.php.
Okay. /videochat. Okay.
.php.
Okay.
And that lists a bunch of video chat software.
Right. AnyMeeting,
Apple FaceTime, BigBlueButton, BlueJeans, Facebook, don't use it, Free Conference Call, Google Duo, Google Meet, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a bunch of them there.
Okay.
Many of them are free, and it tells you what's free and what's not free and how they all work and blah, 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 and the pros and cons of each one.
All right. Very good.
One thing you might want to try is Google Meet.
Okay.
If any of your people can use that, not everyone can, but that works. One of the things you're going to find, Skype certainly works. It's free for up to 50 people, and that's easily downloadable by everybody.
Yeah.
One of the things you're going to come up against, however, is what you intimated yourself, which is that everybody's got a different circumstance.
Yes.
And much of what you're seeing, the freezing, the stuttering, the poor quality audio, that has nothing to do with Zoom and everything to do with the way the person at the other end is using their machine.
Yeah, I've been in Zoom meetings with 200 people and it's fine.
And it's fine.
The host has to have the best internet to be good. But
Right.
That's where I've used the GoToMeeting, and you know, we can have up to over 200 people in right. our club log in and get in on it, asking questions, listen to the speaker, and it all runs very smooth. But like you were saying,
but it's not free.
No, that's not free.
Right.
But again, you know, it's you get what you pay for.
Right.
Like we've always said.
Well, it relies heavily on Java, so anybody still using Internet Explorer, it's going to crash on them. And it may not work under every operating system anymore. But the point is that you can go through that list and take a look at it. In fact, most of them are free, so you can try them.
Or have a free trial. Even GoToMeeting has a free trial, and then it's $12 a month.
Right.
Okay.
But at any rate, what you're going to find is that what we've been trying to get people to understand is that these things are not magic.
No.
If you're not using a headset, you're going to have bad audio.
That's right.
About 90% of the time. That's a simple fact of life.
Yeah.
If you're using earbuds from your phone, you're going to have bad audio. That's a simple fact of life. If you have not great internet, or your internet is, you've got a lot of people on your internet.
Yeah.
Steve had that problem one mm-hmm. week.
When my son lived at home and was on his Xbox all the time.
Exactly right. So you have certain issues there. If you don't have fiber internet or whatever, you're gonna find that the more people on your system, on your network, your local network in your house.
Yeah.
You may find stuttering and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So there's no magic. There's no magic cure for the issues you're seeing, and you can't solve all of them no matter what product you use. But certainly, as Steve said, Zoom can handle hundreds of people without a problem if all of them are on a fast connection with a decent machine.
There's a lot of variables.
And having a good headset with a microphone. And I know a lot of people don't like to use them because it doesn't look as good.
Yeah, that's how I know.
And I don't care
about
that.
And some of it is you spend a little more than $20 and you get the ones that fit in your ear and you cover it with your hair.
Yeah, right.
And you run the cord behind your back.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, well, no, I wear cans. Well, I have hearing aids, so I'm not gonna put anything in my ear anyway. But I wear cans and it has a microphone in the front. And I don't care if you don't like the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. You can hear me, and I can hear you. And that's all that counts on those things.
One of the reasons that Zoom got so popular so fast is because it's so easy to use.
That's right.
You click a link, and you're in. You don't have to make an account. That's the biggest thing that we see as a hurdle, that most of the other services, you need to have an account with that service.
Right.
With Zoom, you just click the link, and you're in.
Yeah. The more I learn, the more I'm inclined to think I better stick with Zoom. And for many of the reasons you described, part of the problem is I would say that 70% of the computer users in this building are at best average users, and they're going to go to the default, to the most popular. And there is green light in this building, but I'm disappointed that so few people have used it. There are 99 apartments, but only, so far as I can tell, 38 units have installed it. And a lot of people are still using Frontier and lesser quality internet.
Frontier is much, much slower, and you will find that particularly,
it's also cheaper,
if you're one-on-one, like if you're Zooming with your grandkids, it's fine. But when you start adding streams, you're going to find that you reach its limits very quickly.
Yeah, and that's probably why. I wonder if that's why it locks up so frequently too. Yeah. Well, thank you. Do you have time for another question, or
Yeah, go ahead. What's your other question?
Okay, this is very product specific. I have a Lenovo ThinkPad. It's 2 years old, and my question is about updates. Frequently on the Lenovo dashboard, I get a notice that I'm going to get an update. Like the next one is for Monday the 25th. And probably 7 out of 10 times, the update that they advertise on that dashboard doesn't download, and or it doesn't show up so I can download it. And I wonder if, and then frequently what I've done is gone into settings. I use Windows 10 and go into settings on Windows 10, and under optional updates or other updates, I'll find a Lenovo update that that can be installed. And I frequently do them, particularly all the driver updates. I've not had any problems that are visible to me, but would you have an idea about why some of these advertised updates aren't coming into my machine? Are they for a different machine, or are they sending out sort of a scattershot notice to...
Here's the thing. Windows updates itself, not necessarily the machine. And it generally only updates security updates and non-optional updates.
Right.
Any optional update you have to go look for.
Okay. So, by definition, Lenovo updates, Windows would define as optional.
Yeah, it doesn't care. Right.
And that's why the Lenovo dashboard is telling you there's Lenovo updates. So you need to go into the Lenovo program to look for updates, not into the Windows update.
Yes, I know that. But
yeah.
Yeah, that... But I, as I said, I've occasionally found them under other updates in the Windows settings.
Yeah, sometimes Lenovo will post an update to Microsoft if it's important enough that more people need to get to it.
Yeah, they do that. They offer that. Okay, you've answered my questions, and thank you so much.
Absolutely. Have fun.
Have fun. Oh, okay. All right. Bye.
Thanks, Gary. Bye. Bye.
I say you might want to check his settings. He may be set to notify but not install.
Right.
Sometimes you can be notified but not install, notify and download, or notify, download, install. There's three steps.
Right. And yes, you do need to understand and remember that Microsoft honestly doesn't care about anybody else's updates. So if you find that you're not seeing updates that aren't Microsoft specific, you may have to look somewhere else, as Gary had to do to get his updates. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, guys. Well, I've got a big problem and a small problem, if you have time for that.
Sure.
The big problem is that I can't get my Wi-Fi to work. It doesn't come on, and it looks like my F keys aren't functioning.
Okay, what?
Oh, right. It's a Toshiba satellite laptop on Windows 10.
Does it have a separate Wi-Fi switch on it? A lot of laptops did.
I could not find one. I looked all over and could not find one.
Well, sometimes it's the FN key and then one of the F keys.
Right. If it's not a physical switch, it may be an F key.
Usually over in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see it looks like a little tower symbol on one of the F keys. And quite often what you have to do, and it's like usually an orange, so that means that you have to hold down the FN key and then hit...
Just said that his function keys aren't working. His F keys are not working.
Right. I tried that, and it doesn't do anything. And it also doesn't brighten the screen or darken the screen or...
Yeah.
How old is this machine?
It's about 3 years old.
Somewhere in your programs, there should be... go to start and then all programs or programs or whatever it is and look for Toshiba.
Yeah, I can't find all programs. I'm not sure how to do that.
Well, it might just be under programs, or you could do a search for Toshiba.
On the computer itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there should be a Toshiba utilities program. Under that is an accessibility section, and you can turn on and off the FN key.
Right. So I can't find that. I've looked for it. I can't find the Toshiba, anything that says Toshiba. I can't find, you know, when they have the list of all the programs on, you know, when I click the Windows button, I can't find Toshiba there.
What you might have to do, it sounds like somehow or another that got erased. What you might have to do is go to the Toshiba website, and you can download a lot of their utilities.
Okay.
And in the utilities, you can then install those programs that will do maintenance and other setups for you.
Toshiba's security certificate expired last November.
Last November. Very exciting.
Because I'm trying to point the link to the Toshiba F-key utility.
Right. There is a, if you can find the function lock key on your keyboard.
And yeah, it looks like it's the F1. There's a little padlock.
Well, look around. It might be that one. It might be something else, but depending on the model you've got. But there should be a function lock key. If you hold the FN key and function lock key simultaneously, that will toggle enabling or disabling the F keys.
Yeah, I've tried that.
Okay.
Something sounds like something's gotten in there that's, you might have some virus or spyware.
It's possible, yeah.
That's disabling you doing anything to subvert what it's trying to do.
Huh. Okay.
I would definitely dance the full tango.
Okay, I haven't done that in the last couple of days since this occurred.
Yeah. I would definitely recommend it.
But I would also do what Dave said earlier, which is to go to Toshiba's website, put in your serial number. I think Toshiba's one of the sites that does that.
Mm-hmm.
And download the accessibility or utilities software.
And get those installed.
But that's, but yeah, if you've got, again, it might be, it might be function and numlock. You might try that. Hold the function key down and hit numlock. That may turn it on.
Oh.
As well. So give that a try.
Huh.
If you don't have a numlock key, use F11. So function.
I've got a numlock key, and I tried those, and let's see if I press.
Well, what's your other question? We can't, you know.
Yeah, we got a minute left. What's your other question?
The other question is, at the same time that this happened, on the bar at the bottom, which has the icons for the
sure.
programs that are open, there is now a white horizontal bar where you type in an address.
Yes.
That was not there before, and I'd like to get rid of that.
Okay. That is part of Windows. It is a thing that Microsoft adds in.
Mm.
And I
right click on the taskbar, not on any button, but on the taskbar itself. And you can turn on and off certain things, and one of them that apparently got turned on is address bar.
Right.
Oh, okay.
All right, we got to take a quick break.
Okay, thank you.
Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy cow. I think that's Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Did you forget for a moment? At 36 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
We had to check the label inside his shirt.
Yeah, or his underwear.
I was grooving to the music.
Yeah. Yeah. You keep using that excuse.
Yeah.
All right. So we had a couple of text messages. First, Will from down in Hamilton, Virginia, where it probably doesn't have 12 feet of snow. You know, I shouldn't complain. It's January 23rd, and we're really getting our first big, serious snowfall.
And it wasn't that much.
So, yeah, okay. I should stop complaining. At any rate.
No, we can, because, you know, they were saying it was supposed to be a very light winter, and so far it has been.
It has been.
We were joking that Jackie and I were shoveling the parking lot this morning because the snowplow hadn't shown up yet. Snowplow's driven by your husband. He's in trouble.
He's in some trouble. I do have to say, I got to use my snowbome today. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's B-R-U with an umlaut M. And it essentially, it looks like a kind of a safety razor. And you essentially shave your car. And you just pull the snow right off and you're done.
I use a squeegee.
It's the same idea.
On a long stick.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I have. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah, for doing your second story windows.
It's very cool. Anyway, Will, who's in Hamilton, Virginia, laughing at the snow people, has a question about SSDs and wants to know if 128 gig is okay. And what he mostly does is, I don't remember.
Video streaming.
Yeah. Video streaming doesn't use any of your storage, so that will not matter. It might use some temporary storage, but not a lot.
Yeah, not much.
But an SSD, the way you tell how much storage you need is by looking at how much stuff is on your hard drive right now. 128 gigs certainly will take any operating system you can name and a lot of files. Most operating systems are under 30 gig. Usually. Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends on what you get. Obviously, if you're going to have every program under the sun, you're going to use a lot more. But the operating system itself is under 30 gig generally. So at that point, certainly under 50 gig. So you've still got close to 100 gig of free storage.
Over half of it.
Right. So you should know, you know, what you can do with that. And certainly an SSD boots up much faster and lasts just as long as a hard drive. A couple weeks ago, I replaced both of my drives with SSD drives, and I'm loving it.
Why not just, you know, I mean, 128 gig versus just going with a terabyte? Yeah. I mean,
well, SSDs are expensive when you get into the larger capacities. Yeah. You can get a 128 gig drive for probably $30. But 128 is really, really small.
Yeah, yeah. How much is a terabyte one, though?
Well, if it's your only drive, it's very, very small.
Yeah.
If it's your boot drive, then it's not very small. So it depends on how the rest of your system looks. If it's your only drive, you really want at least a half a terabyte, if not a full terabyte, depending on what you do. But if all you're doing is essentially using it like a Chromebook, 128 gig is more than enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second text was about my tiny to-do. I talked about that last week. It's a to-do list that I absolutely love, and this person who did not name him or herself said they downloaded it. It seems to be a bunch of PHP files. How do I use it? Well, as I thought I intimated last week, and I probably did not make this clear, you need to have it on a server. It's a PHP file. So
it is a bunch of PHP files.
It is a bunch of PHP files, and you use it on a web server.
With a PHP interpreter.
Right. So if you're not using a web server that runs PHP, the language, then you can't use My Tiny To Do. You'll need to find something else, and that's why we also talked about Google Keep and the milk one. Don't forget the milk and all of those. So unless you've got a web server, and of course, if you do put it on a web server, then you have to be able to reach the web server. So
remember the milk.
Remember the whatever it is. Don't forget the milk. Remember the milk. Remember the main. Don't forget the Alamo. Whatever it all is. But you will not be able to use My Tiny To Do without a web server. And now we can go to the phones where we have Rich patiently waiting, I hope, in Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich. What's up?
Yes, waiting inside and just watching the snow outside.
See, that's the best place to be.
Yes, it is. I don't want a shovel.
Yep.
Anyway, on to my question. Try to make this short. I have a Ring thing on the front of the house, and according to Ring, it's not close enough to my Wi-Fi to be getting a great signal. It gets a signal but doesn't get a great one. They suggested a Wi-Fi extender, and I was just wondering if you guys have any recommendations for that. Does it have to be a... I have a TP wireless or Linksys, whatever you want to call it, router. Does it have to match that? And I would probably just put it downstairs on an outside wall plug near the ring so that it was closer and, you know, give me a little better coverage downstairs even, I guess.
Yeah. Basically, the best extender is the same company of your main router. So if you have a Linksys router, get a Linksys extender. If you have a TP-Link router, get a TP-Link extender. And you generally need to put it about halfway between where the router currently is and the place you're trying to get to, because it's going to pick up the signal from the router and then broadcast it along to the next stage down the line. The problem with most of the extenders is they usually cut your bandwidth in half, because half of the bandwidth goes back to the main router to pick up the signal from there, and then half of the bandwidth goes forward to your next devices. There has been a change in the Wi-Fi industry, and most new routers now are mesh routers. That's the new word, is a mesh router. And all the different brands have them, Netgear, Linksys, TP-Link. We kind of like the Eero ourselves. Until Amazon bought them, and now we're not too sure. but with a mesh router, you have your base station, and then you can sprinkle your satellite or beacons around your house to get more coverage. And they have a separate back channel for communicating back to the main router, so it doesn't slow down to the next devices down the link. But then you would, in essence, have to replace all of your routers. Do you know what wireless technology you're using now? Is it G or N or AC?
I believe it's N or G, one or the other, I believe. I don't think it's anything other than that.
Yeah, those are both pretty old. G is only, what was G? G was 10 and N was 300. Mm-hmm. AC is 1100, and the new AX, which is now called Wi-Fi 6, because we need more numbers,
right.
Is like 2200. So
megabits per second.
Megabits per second, yeah. So even a single Wi-Fi 6 router might be enough because it's faster and has more range.
Well, right. That's the range that's important.
Yeah.
Right.
But then...
My coverage to currently a couple of laptops, a Fire Stick on the TV downstairs. This room is in the back of the house. That's where the router is upstairs and down to the front room. I believe I've got great coverage down here in the first place. It's just that ring on the outside of the house on the brick. So
yeah. Right. And brick will block a radio signal.
Tender.
Yeah.
It might just be able to connect that extra foot, if you will, that it might need to have a good signal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. One thing you can do is map your house's Wi-Fi. There is a program... and I forget what the version on the Mac is, on the iPhone is called.
iStumbler.
Stumbler?
Stumbler, yeah. There's a bunch of different Wi-Fi analyzers is a keyword, or Stumble, because it maps Wi-Fi networks, and you can see how strong your signal is as you take a laptop or a phone around your house.
Right. So what you do is you download that Wi-Fi analyzer. I use one called Wi-Fi Analyzer on the Android phone.
Yeah, I think I've seen those before.
Yeah, and what you do is when you turn it on, you can see how strong the signal is. And you can see everybody's signal, not just yours. So
Right. Part
of the problem may be that somebody else's signal is stronger than yours and is kind of blocking your signal.
When you look at your Wi-Fi list on your computer, do you see a bunch of neighbors' networks?
A few, but not a lot.
You may want to change the channel your Wi-Fi is broadcasting on. It seems like every router comes on channel 6. And so that can interfere between you and your neighbors. If you log into your router's interface, there should be a setting to change the channel.
Maybe I'll try that first and see if that works or work. It's just that the ring on the outside of the house, we have a mailman that comes right up to the house and is like right in front of the thing, and it doesn't detect him, but somebody walking by once in a while might get detected. And they're saying that it's the Wi-Fi connection between it is why it's not, you know, even getting him. Now, I'll walk outside to get the mail or just peer out the door, and it catches me.
It's
intermittent. So one thing you might try to do is move your router.
Now that's kind of going to be a little bit hard.
Yeah, okay. But that's – so your choices are these. First, you can replace your router with a mesh network. That's not cheap. You can move your router. That's not easy. You can buy an extender, and you should buy it from the same company that makes your router. But depending on how old your router is, an extender may slow your network down by half.
Okay.
And so, but those are pretty much your choices.
Yeah, but if he's got one of the older routers, moving up to like an Orb would probably be a good move for him. You know, he's going to get, you can get the kits now that have multi, it has the Orb.
Orbi from Netgear.
Has the Orbi, has the main base station, and then it also comes with, you know, you can get either two or three satellites or extenders.
Yeah, Linksys is called Velop.
And they are so easy to set up. It is literally, it walks you right through it.
Google also makes their mesh network. Linksys makes a mesh network. Everybody makes a mesh network.
They tend to be about $100 per box. So your main router and then however many satellites you want.
Right.
Yeah, because I've got two of them satellites in my house, only because, like Nick, I've got an old house that was built in 1928 with a lot of chicken wire in the walls. So, you know, it's like a Faraday cage in some rooms. You could be in the room and, you know, the phone will act depending on which way you're facing or whatever. You got to literally move out of the area. Or you don't get anything. So that's where I had to put one of the Wi-Fi extenders.
Right.
And I get great connection now.
Yep. So you really have some choices to make, but none of them, I think, are going to be free.
Right. Well, and I was thinking for the extender, I don't know, I've looked for, seen them for like under $50 or around $50 and, you know, giving that a try just to see and you know, hopefully it doesn't ruin the rest of my Wi-Fi connection. But
if you get a different brand than your main router, then they're harder to set up.
Yeah. Right. Well, no, I was going to get it with the same the TP-Link or whatever.
Yeah.
In fact, you might want to look in your main router first to see if it has an option to be extended. Some of the older routers can't be extended.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
That would show in the if I were to log into it.
Yeah, there's usually you'll find an option to set up an extender, or might call it WDS, the wireless distribution system. Okay. There would be a setting to add an extender for your network.
Okay. All right, great information.
All right, good luck, Rich.
Yeah, we always it's annoying. Your main wireless router should be in the center of the house. But it has to be hardwired to your internet service.
Right.
And your internet service comes in at one of the outside walls. And so that's where it ends up being started, at your outside wall. So you got great coverage at that end of the house, but the other end of the house, not so much.
I took that into account when I first got a connection.
Yeah.
And the computer room is centrally upstairs. So it's really in the middle of the house, essentially. Yeah.
You can usually talk the internet guy into running the main router where your office is.
Right.
So move your office to the center of that house.
Right. So I put it there. I get it, not that anybody lives in our attic, but I get it in the attic. I get it everywhere except in the corner of the basement. I get it on the porch. And no sooner is it all set up than my wife says, well, I want to sit out on the other side of the pond.
you can string a cable.
Happy wife, happy life.
Exactly.
We had a customer where his office was at one end of the house and his garage is at the other end in his workshop, so he was having trouble getting Wi-Fi in his garage. And then he got an electric car, and it couldn't reach the Wi-Fi to run its updates. So we put him a new Eero system so he could reach it down. So we're sitting in the car watching the update progress download, and then we get a message that says you won't be able to drive for 20 to 30 minutes while this update is installing.
Oh, interesting.
And so it warns you, you know, continue. So he said, we better get out of the car before the door buttons.
You're in there.
The electronic door open switch stops working because there's no mechanical switch.
Oh, right.
Either that or get the windows rolled down.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah. I just want to know if I could ask a clarification on a couple of basic points. When you sync, if I've got two Android phones, the main one I use, I got to use a backup phone. It's just for whatever. If you put information in the main phone that's on, et cetera, the other one's off, whatever, and it will that sync that information automatically to the second Android device?
Well, what it will do...
it will try if you have syncing turned on.
Right. If you have syncing turned on, What it actually does is sync to your Google account.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you turn the other phone on, if it has syncing on, it will sync from the Google account to your phone.
Okay, good. Because here's my concern. I changed my password. I tried to. It was on Google. It's like pulling teeth. But I changed the password, and I got the impression that it only, if you wanted to save the password, which is another issue, but I got the impression that it would only save the password to that one device you're on. And if you wanted to go to another device, you had to go through the whole schmear again for it to save the password to that device.
What password?
You said, pardon?
What password?
Well, it was a password
for Google?
Yeah, it was a Google password, yeah.
Then no, you don't have to worry about that.
Well, maybe, because there are different syncing services. You can sync your bookmarks, you can sync your documents, you can sync your passwords, you can sync your contacts.
That's true.
And you have to turn each of them on and off separately as you desire.
Well, what concerned me about that's a good point, because what concerned me, I was reading the directions and whatever, and it said what this will do, it'll sync it to your, history or so-and-so, and I thought, wait a minute, I don't want the password to get out there to all those different you know, components. I just want to, and it said, I got the impression, I did it on the computer at the library, and I got the impression that it will only save it to that device. If I wanted to go to my phone and change it, I'd have to go through the whole thing all over again. Is that right or wrong?
It depends if you have password syncing turned on.
Yeah.
If it's turned off, then you have to
change. If it's asking you to save that password when you changed it,
mm-hmm.
Right. Then it's saving
it.
Right.
It gave me the option to do it.
Yeah,
so if
you want to save the password in your Google account, it will sync to your other devices.
Yep.
The danger with that, and we've seen this happen in the real world, is that if someone breaks into your Google account, they now have all your passwords because that's where you sync them to.
Right, because that's going to be my third question. Is there any exposure of your password when you do that?
That's anywhere you save your password off your device, well, even on your device, but anywhere you save your password off your device, there is exposure.
And that's why we always recommend right now is using other products to save your password. And like Nick and I recommend using EnPass. EnPass can create passwords that would take somebody forever and a lifetime to crack.
Well, in this particular case, something like EnPass or LastPass or Dashlane has the option, you may have to pay to get this option, but they have an option to encrypt your database before it uploads it.
Mm, yeah, I do have LastPass, but I don't have that on it. Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, what I'm going to do is go back in and I've never saved passwords because I thought there might be some exposure, but this time I did just for the heck of it to see if it worked, and unfortunately it gave me this shopping list where it would send it.
And if you're on a public computer like at a library, you should never type in a password on any website.
Right.
Because you don't know if that...
Who's listening?
Right, you don't know if that public computer has a keylogger or something installed on
it.
Yeah, no, I hear you there. Yeah, the... Right, because I had to do it because it didn't work on my I sent Google about three or four nasty responses because it would send you a verification to change it, and it had no or yes, and you kept tapping on the phone, and the buttons wouldn't work. So you're dead in the water, so I figured I'd have to go to the library and get a real computer. My other quick question, if I could, it's Yahoo Mail. I have an account there I use for junk, and it's... what did I want to ask you on the Yahoo Mail? Hang on a second. I have it written down here. Oh, right. It's just a basic thing. It says, maybe they're talking about a computer because it said you click on the icon, you get a drop-down menu, and it'll say address book or contacts or something like that. I can't find it on my Android phone. All it'll say is, do you want to add a new email? Is that their definition? No,
there are several... The issue with doing it on your phone is that it's a completely different interface.
Yeah.
And you may find that in one of the corners are three or four little lines.
Well, and you have to be using the Yahoo app, not the Android Mail app.
Right.
The Android Mail app can only do mail.
If that's what you want to do, you can add Yahoo Mail to your Android app, your Android Mail app. But you have to do that first. Or you use Yahoo's own app,
which will then have the contacts and calendars.
Right.
Okay, I think, I don't know if that's downloaded or not, because it's when I open my phone bank, there's Yahoo right there already. Okay, that's a good point. I'll double check that. All right, so now I should go back into my Gmail account then and pull it up. And can you undo what you did in terms of saving passwords?
You can turn it off, and then you have to go to your Gmail account, find the file, and delete it.
Delete the file. Okay, that's great. All right, that's very helpful, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
yep. it. Yeah. There is always exposure. If you're going to save passwords anywhere on the web, there will be exposure. That's why we recommend something that will compile. What's the word I'm looking for?
Pre-internet encryption?
Encrypt. They will pre-encrypt it before it sends it up to your...
We always want PI, pre-internet encryption.
Right. You okay. Keep PI.
All right, we're going to take one quick question here that came in. It says, Kate here. Good afternoon. I have a desktop that is infrequently used. Since we use the laptop or iPad more, but the desktop is still Windows 7, would like to go straight to Windows 10, but not sure if it will encounter a lot of issues. Can I upgrade myself, or should I take it somewhere?
Well, depending on how old that laptop is, and it has Windows 7 on it,
yeah.
It may not be a good candidate for Windows 10. That's a simple fact.
Microsoft does have a Windows 10 compatibility checklist
right.
that I'll post.
And that's probably the best place to go right now and check out to see if your machine is capable of running Windows 10.
Yeah, because if it's over 5 years old,
probably not.
Nah.
Right.
Wouldn't recommend it.
Right. All right. That music tells me that we are done for this particular hour, but holy moly, we've got a whole another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming up. That's right. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Take a short bio break, but we'll be right back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415 or text us at 585-205-8887. And we will be back in just a few minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We had a text message that said this person is in Google Sheets, likes to write their own formulas, functions, whatever you want to call them, and wants to know how to increase the font size in the function bar, not in a cell, in the spreadsheet, that's easy, but in the function bar itself, because that would make it much easier to read. And
I found a way to make the function bar bigger, but it didn't make the font in it any bigger.
Yeah, they already know how to do that. So the question is, how do you... and I don't know that, to be honest. I don't see a way to do it. During the break, I was trying to figure out a way to do that. And if you change the default font size, it actually does it for the cell that you're putting the formula in and not for the bar itself. That's a lovely question. I will continue to look into it.
I've seen other people asking it.
But at this point, we do not have a firm answer.
Yeah, sorry.
We'll have to get back to him.
In formula bar. I'm also looking in help for the, although that didn't seem to work. Doesn't matter. We'll figure it out. We'll try to take a look and see what the story is. But we don't have an answer right now, and I am sorry. So we're going to go back to the phone. Our next caller is James in Rochester, New York. Hi, James. What's up?
Oh, hello. I'm looking to buy a Chromebook, and I'm asking your recommendation. What would be the best quality with the largest screen? I run Windows.
Well...
What is the largest screen size on a Chromebook?
I think the largest I've seen... Well, it depends. Is this something you're going to carry around?
No.
Then you can get a Chrome box and add any size monitor you want. I have a friend who's got a 28-inch monitor on his Chromebook.
No. It's going to be portable, but I'm not necessarily care.
Okay.
No, it's going to be like a laptop.
Okay,
17.
17 is the biggest I've seen.
17-inch.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know which one would be very good quality? I'm not looking for, like, the cheapest price.
There are several. HP makes... I've got an HP that you can beat with a stick and it won't die. I've got an Asus that I love. I have seen Lenovo's that were very, very fine. So any one of those would work. But I will say that the most rugged, and I've owned several now, the most rugged laptop I've ever owned was my HP.
They've been known. HP has been well touted for decades on some of their computers and how tough they are. I mean, we had another lifetime ago, we had a friend, Bob Smith, who had an IBM ThinkPad. And he dropped that, super glued it in so many corners. And it still ran like a top.
That's a good quality one.
Yeah, and now Lenovo owns them.
Yeah, and they're good machines.
So no. Lenovo, HP, they're both, isn't it Lenovo?
Lenovo bought IBM, not HP.
No, that's what I'm saying. Lenovo owns ThinkPads.
ThinkPads, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also,
you were saying HP.
Yeah, I'm also going to buy a laptop because I want both.
Sure.
But I'm edging towards an HP laptop also.
Yeah, they're very good quality machines. I would say that you could probably do a whole lot worse than an HP and not much better.
I think I looked at one, a Spectra or something.
I don't remember the various models.
Yeah, they come out and change it.
And that's one of the tricky things is that all the companies, they'll make a cheap one, a good one, and a really good one.
Yeah, right.
I want the really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you can take a good look
found an article from Laptop Magazine on who makes the toughest Chromebooks. We dropped 11 to find out.
Where is it? Laptop Magazine?
Yep. I can post this link in a minute. Let me see. Does it give the summary?
Research also.
One thing you can do is go to google.com/Chromebook. And you can see all kinds of Chromebooks that are available from multiple manufacturers, and do some checking. There's some premium, of course. They're gonna push the Google Pixel books, but there are a number of good ones.
But you would prefer the HP over the Google, correct?
I would. I have to say I've not had a lot of experience with the Google Chromebooks themselves.
But you know the HP.
But I have had several HPs, and they are just rugged as all heck.
One last quick thing. I have an old Toshiba laptop that's on its last legs. What is the best power setting if I'm not home, I leave it on all day, but I can save power because this thing overheats and it shuts down on me, like hibernate, or what is it?
Yeah, there are two different choices. One is hibernate and the other is sleep.
What's the difference?
Thanks for asking that question.
Oh.
Sleep, I believe, actually saves out your entire RAM to hard drive and then shuts the machine right down.
I think that's hibernate.
Maybe that's hibernate. Yeah. I don't remember which is which. Steve's going to look that up. But one of them actually just essentially shuts most stuff down and leaves a trickle of power for the RAM.
So sleep saves stuff to RAM, and Hibernate saves it to the hard drive.
Okay, there you go. And so Hibernate actually takes all of your RAM, sticks it out on the hard drive, and then shuts the machine completely down. So it takes a little longer to come back, but it's better.
Yeah, it's not. I have, like, the old one, like I said, overheats day, every night.
And then if it shuts down unexpectedly, the power dies or crashes like that, everything in RAM is lost.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if you do Hibernate, first make sure you've got enough free disk space to do that. That's important. But if you do, and it should be at least the size of your RAM, at least, if not twice.
Okay, at least the size of RAM.
Right. And so once, if you set it to Hibernate, your system will then put everything out to the disk and then shut down. Yeah. So when you start it up again, it's going to take a minute to pull everything back from the hard drive, but you don't really care.
No, I just want to save this overheating every day.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. You can also buy pads with heat with fans in them to set under it, and they're powered by the USB, and that helps cool it. But again, if it's old enough, those aren't really going to help, like my MacBook.
Yeah,
and I still can't get those stinking screws off. But I've got a fan under it, and it doesn't do enough, I'm afraid.
Okay, we got a couple more questions that came in. The first one is from Fred. It says, "Hi, Fred. It's Fred. My CNC set receive issue, monetary and self checking lock." If I wait, also occurs with software on company network. Memory is at 50 to 60%, jumps up and down, back down. Is 8 gig an issue? What do you suggest? Windows 10. He says a PS. I do have 8 tabs open in Chrome browser, Fred.
You said he had 8 gig.
Yep,
in his machine. That should be enough. This is from, we were talking about the CNC program. We've been doing this for a couple of weeks. It takes two USB ports. One of the things that you might look at, and I don't remember what machine you have, Fred. I apologize for that. No, I don't. So many machines. You've got a USB converter to Cat 5 to another converter, I think. All of that. It's also taking 2 USB ports. One of the things I might suggest is if you have multiple USB ports on multiple cards in your machine, don't put both of those USB ports on the same card, on the same interrupt. Set one to one card and one to the other. So, for example, on my machine, I've got USB ports in the back and USB ports in the front, and they're in 2 different cards and they're 2 different blah, 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 blah. So if you can stretch a cord to plug one in the back and one in the front, that may help with your issue. But I think it's got a lot to do with the Frankenstein you've created in terms of all these various connections. Not keeping up. And I'm sorry, but I think that's a large part of your issue.
Yep. All right, we've got one other. I said it's an HP Desk Pro. Again, there's so many variables that he's got going on there.
Who is this he? Is this the same? Is this James again?
Fred. He just...
Oh, it's Fred. It's more Fred. But again, so that may help if you can figure out two different USB ports. But I honestly think it's got a lot to do with the Frankenstein you've created, and it's like from what I remember, you've got a USB converted to Cat 5 and then converted back to something maybe.
Probably back to USB to do a long run USB. That was common for USB and FireWire and
right.
even video. we rigged up an operatory theater so that there were video cameras in the surgery, and then they could watch, students could watch the operation down the hall.
Sure.
So we had to sit in on a few operations to make sure everything was working.
Yeah, I'd be sitting there like this. I'm not my thing.
All right, we got one other quick one before we go back to the phones here. I'm getting download speeds on my modem of 230, but my download speed on my Netgear router is only 35 on my tablet and 105 on my Chromebook. Is there a way to speed up the router speed? Moving the antennas doesn't seem to do much. Thanks, Bob.
Well, Bob, the way that works is that it sounds like your system is connected through probably a regular Ethernet cable to your desktop and through Wi-Fi to your tablet and your Chromebook. And yes, they will be slower because Wi-Fi is slower than direct connection. In addition, depending on how old your tablet is, it may not be capable of doing that speed. There's a lot more, and this is the thing a lot of people don't understand. There's a lot more to speed than just the speed.
Yeah.
There's also how fast the other side can send you data, and then there's how fast your machine can process the data.
Each device is totally different depending on the age and other specs.
Exactly right. So I have that issue indeed on my tablet as well. My tablet is those ONN tablets from Walmart, and it's cheap. It was $100. And so it's slow. The tablet itself is not slow, but it's slow doing processing when you're downloading stuff. Because remember, the system has to do the download, then take that download and store it somewhere. Then the next thing has to come down. It has to be stored. It has to be connected to the first one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And some machines are faster than that with that than others. And so it depends on how fast your Ethernet connection is. And wireless is slower than wired Ethernet. It depends on how fast your wireless card is. And it depends on how fast your processor will handle the data. So it is not surprising to me that your tablet is slow, your Chromebook is faster, but your desktop is fastest. I'm sorry, it's not a surprise to me that that's the way it is.
You can
fix that by buying a faster tablet or a faster Chromebook.
And faster in multiple ways, faster processor, faster RAM, faster storage.
Right.
So in addition to capacity
and a faster network card in case, because we talked about this already, AN versus B versus AX
is the current.
Right.
Yeah.
So all of that is also in the mix.
Yep.
There's way, way more to wireless particularly than there is to wired. All right. Our next caller.
There was a comment in the YouTube chat on the sheets problem. If you hit Command Plus, it will make everything on the sheet bigger, including Control Plus on a PC makes everything on the sheet bigger, including the function bar, at the loss of rows and columns.
Right.
Usually Control 0 or Command 0 on a Mac. So on my Mac, I can see the column O and row 33, and everything is tiny. Or if I make it big enough to be legible, now I can only see the column H and row 15.
What is it? Control dash, did you say?
Control plus to make it bigger, plus. And control minus to make
to
it
make
smaller.
To make it smaller.
Right. Yeah.
That's always been there.
And also you can do that often with control in the scroll wheel.
Yeah.
Depending on your system.
And that's different than the zoom command inside of sheets. The command plus and minus controls the whole font on the website itself, where the Google Zoom command only controls the tables. It doesn't change the interface.
Right.
So we sometimes joke about how big developers' monitors must be that, you know, they can see all that text when it's at the native size of the screen. Because I always have mine zoomed in at least two or three times.
I had a guy who worked for me who had his stuff on the web, so he had four terminals open, and the text was so tiny I could barely read it with my nose on the screen.
Yep.
But he could sit way back and see every. I hated him. I just wanted to stick an ice pick in his ear. But I'm Italian. But he could sit back and work all day long at that and keep all four of those windows happy and open. And he said he used to have six, but I thought that was a little extravagant.
Back in the early days, we were working on a website for a customer, and he had like a 20-inch monitor, and he kept wanting us to design it for his 20-inch monitor. So, well, most people only have 15-inch monitors these days.
Right.
I don't care. I have a 20-inch. Okay, right. All your people are going to be needing to scroll back and forth all the time. I don't care.
As long as he doesn't care, that's how it works. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, Nick, stick an ice pick in his ear and throw him in the trunk.
You got it.
I wanted to tell you, the gentleman that just about the Wi-Fi speed.
Yeah.
If he upgrades anything and he's able to do the 5 gigahertz, wow, what a difference.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
I get my Ethernet speeds on my 5G, on my 5 gigahertz.
Yeah, you do. The big thing, of course, is the 5G is a shorter signal.
And that's the confusing now. It says 5G in the Wi-Fi, but it's not 5G. It's 5 gigahertz.
Right.
5.8 if you want to be technical.
Yeah, right.
we're actually on Wi-Fi 6 now.
Right.
But yeah. A lot of people are probably using Wi-Fi 5, which is the AC. The 5 gigahertz is less crowded, so it's often faster. But it doesn't go through walls as well as 2.4 gigahertz. And I have seen a lot of routers. I was just at a customer the other day. They made the 2.4 and the 5 gigahertz two separate networks. So you had to switch between them. And when she was on the 5 gigahertz network, because she could get a good signal, she couldn't print because the printer was on the 2.4 gigahertz network.
Right.
They should be the same network.
But yes, I have that actually in my house. There are a couple of devices on my network that can only see the 2.4 gigahertz signal.
Yeah.
Because they're far enough away that the 5G doesn't reach. 5G doesn't reach.
Yeah.
My
5 gigahertz reaches downstairs, but my modem is, my router is centrally located in the house. But it reaches downstairs, and I've got a Roku down here, and it picks it up great.
Yeah, my house is like Dave's. Mine was built in the late 1800s, so there's just a lot blocking it.
Brick will block the signal, and the caller had said he had a brick wall on his house, so that'll block the signal a little bit. We've seen houses that have a big fireplace in the center of the house. That screws it up. All the metal in the kitchen, all your kitchen appliances.
Right.
So if your router's on one side of the kitchen and your office is on the other side, that'll mess it up.
Yep.
Yeah. The other gentleman with the Wi-Fi not reaching far enough, he said. That was quite a while ago. I had a buddy. What he did is he had his router that had the antennas in the back, and they unscrewed, you know, and they had those little connectors. And
right.
He went on Amazon, and he bought an extension cable, and he bought a tall antenna, and he ran the cable over down the wall, and he ran it to the antenna, and he put one of those strips on the wall and stuck the antenna in the plastic strip that hides wires.
Yeah.
And he gets the Wi-Fi all over the house now.
Yeah, that's a nice idea.
If you have a bigger antenna.
It's got like a 4-foot antenna.
Yeah.
How long's the antenna in your house, Dave? 20 feet?
Yeah. That's a different antenna. But yeah, that's actually...
No, one of them is 124 feet.
Yeah.
And then I've got a couple 90 feet. I've got four antennas up all total.
Yeah. None of them do Wi-Fi.
You should try, though. I remember this. Well,
because what you really want to do is have somebody in Connecticut on your network.
I remember that. The longest Wi-Fi record was like 10 miles. In the early days, someone was trying to get a Wi-Fi signal to an island off the coast, and they put up giant transmitter antennas.
I know one of my students did his thesis on how far you could extend Wi-Fi using a Pringles can.
Yep, Cantenna. 230 miles. That was the record in 2007
that was his thesis.
Mountaintop to mountaintop.
Yep.
Well, some folks use, believe it or not, because they're in AOHs, you know, homeowner associations.
Right.
They use slinkies. And what they do is they tie a slinky to one end of the gutter and then another one to the other, and they hook up a connector.
Yep.
And they can move the slinky along this wire to tune the antenna for the radio.
Again, well, this is hold on. Yep. Let us let everybody know that this has nothing to do with Wi-Fi for a computer. Well, Dave is now talking about ham radio.
Yeah.
So don't call me and say you put up a slinky and you're not getting better signal on your laptop.
Well,
it's not going to happen.
It may, because...
Well, maybe, but I wouldn't trust it.
2.4 gigahertz wireless is a wavelength of about 4 inches.
Yeah.
So if you have your slinky stretched out.
Yeah. That's the technical term for slinky.
So that the wavelength is about 4 inches, then would help.
That would help, probably. Yeah.
Different ideas, I mean.
But anyway, Mark, that's a very good idea to add an extender to the antenna.
It worked great for him. Like I said, he found a 4-foot one.
That's a great idea. Yeah. It's essentially just coax.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah. It's a coax extender. You can get a BNC connector to screw onto the back there, a piece of RG58, and extend it out. And matter of fact, hook them up to the ceiling, according to the ceiling.
Yeah, he just ran it up the wall where he had a piece of molding.
Mm-hmm.
He ran a plastic strip that stuck on the wall and opened it up, put the antenna in there, put the strip back over it so he can't see it.
Right.
It just looks like there's an extra piece of molding on the wall where the other...
That's very clever, particularly if you can run it to somewhere near the middle of the house, you might get better connectivity.
Yeah, camouflage it.
That's a great idea, Mark.
Yeah,
thanks.
Cool.
Yeah, and the other thing people need to do is start doing speed tests because... they are rolling out, if you're on Spectrum, they're rolling out, their standard speed now is 200 megabits.
But you may have to reboot your modem to get that.
Right, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. If you have a Spectrum modem, reboot it, and you may double your speed.
I got mine last week, and I don't know, there must not be a lot of people in my neighborhood on Spectrum because I always run way above. I'm like at 235 or 240.
You win.
Yeah.
Winner, chicken dinner.
It also depends on how close you are to your head end, how many people are on that head end, et cetera, et cetera. So, you win.
I don't know how many people, but I'll tell you, I'm always above what the speed they say, even in the prime part of the day.
And we always talked about that in the marketing, that Time Warner marketed 10 megabit and you got 5 and we're mad. Spectrum markets 100 megabit and you get 120 and you're happy.
Exactly. All right. By the way, speedtest.net is where you should go to do your check, in one of the places. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 30 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 38 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we get back to the phones, we have a couple of texts. Kate, again, says, is the desktop not a laptop? Same answer, yes. And how do you tell how old? Yes, you told us it was a desktop before. We took that into account. And how do you tell how old a machine is? Well, if you don't have the receipt, or as Steve said, if you don't know how old it is, it's too old.
It's too old, yeah. And we were talking about, you look in the Windows directory, see what the dates on the file are. A lot of, in fact, most computers will have a label on them with the name and serial number and things like that. Many of them will have a copyright on it, too.
Right.
And that will tell you the date of the copyright, which is generally the date of the computer.
Right. But Windows 7 is anciently old at any rate. So,
In fact, I remember a lawsuit several companies put together where they had Windows 7 computers that were Windows 10 compatible because Microsoft had issued compatibility issues. And it turns out they changed their mind and none of these Windows 7 computers were compatible. And so a bunch of companies sued Microsoft.
Remember, Windows 10 is 7 years old,
yeah.
So your computer is at least 8, and probably much older. So yeah,
because I've got somebody going back and forth here with the board, which I'm not putting on. He keeps saying he's got 12-year-old PCs that are upgraded from Windows 7 to 10, and they're working fine. Well, good.
Yeah. Good for you, but that's not normal.
Yeah. And
how do you define fine, and what do you do with it? You read your email. Okay, yeah, that'll work fine.
That'll work fine.
It'll run, but will it run the most efficiently? Oh, heck no. Right. Will most programs work great on it? No, because they're designed for the newer architect.
And you may have upgraded the RAM since then, and upgraded the storage since then, and upgraded the video card since then.
Right.
Yeah.
We got another text from Fred, who said his connection is USB to 9-pin to Cat5 to RS-232, and he seems surprised that it's not working perfectly.
With Windows 10, yeah.
Fred, seriously, and of course we were talking about this during the break. What worked under Windows 7 may not work well under Windows 10. What I just had that issue. I upgraded Ubuntu 18.04 to 20.04, and there are a couple of things that don't work right. I had to redo a bunch of things. You just have to expect that, and if particularly when you Frankenstein something like that, and it worked under Windows 7. Frankensteining it under 10 may not work there.
Almost guaranteed that it won't.
Almost guaranteed.
And he probably has a $100,000 CNC machine that has to use the old software.
Yep, exactly. And, right.
There's some cases where a lot of folks still have to because of their software and that. It's locked into that, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to live with that fact or pay the thousands of dollars to upgrade to the next bigger, better thing.
Yeah, the issue may not have anything to do with Windows itself, and it may be with the software not working well under 10.
Well, that's like I was telling you off air there, that I have two machines running, running two different ham radios. One's running Windows 10, one's running Windows 7. And the Windows 10 did a stupid update. Now programs that were working fine
aren't.
But yet on the Windows 7 machine, it still works great.
Yep. Yep.
I remember we had a customer with a vinyl cutter.
Yeah.
Really cool looking thing.
They're very cool thing.
Yeah, it's a printer. It's a printer with a knife on it.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
And
a printer with a knife.
The controller computer, we'd upgraded their, they bought new computers and came with new OSs and whatnot, and it couldn't talk to the vinyl cutter, so we're trying to figure out why. So we look in the computer on the vinyl cutter, and it's DOS.
Wow.
It's booting a floppy disk.
Wow.
And it's running AppleTalk.
Yikes.
Whoa.
Holy moly.
And apparently,
trifecta.
Yeah, it didn't like, OS 9 or something like that. So,
holy moly.
So, keep an ancient Mac around to run this ancient software so we can talk to that vinyl cutter, and we'll see about, getting you a new rip for that vinyl, basically, a raster processor for that new vinyl cutter to get to keep the old machine working.
Wow. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Webster, New York. What's up, Matt?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I remember hearing a couple of the hosts, I can't remember if it was Steve Ray or Dave, talk about always having a problem with their battery, or how these cell phones these days don't have the high-capacity batteries.
That was Dave.
Okay, so Dave, I think I came across your dream phone, so I do want you to eyeball this one thing. I have a recommendation. Now, it's a fairly newer company. This phone is called a OnePlus 8T.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and it has like a double capacity battery. And I was checking this out. For a full day charge, it's a warp charge. It'll give you 10 amps, or 10 volts and 6.5 amps. I just thought I'd let you know this information, and maybe you could look into it. And I think in the future, more and more people are going to demand better battery life.
Well, that's what I said. Yeah, I agree. If some of these phone companies, because they're running out of ideas on what more features they can add, battery life would be the next big thing.
Yep.
And OnePlus is a pretty well-known brand in the tech industry,
right?
But not as good as the Samsungs and
not as well known.
Yeah, but they're just as good a phone,
right?
Just not as well known.
Yeah, I think you're right though, Matt. It's it's going to be the way of the future.
Yeah, and again, I'm sorry, but I'm blaming Apple. Their mania for making the thing as thin as possible means that your batteries have less capacity.
OnePlus has a McLaren edition.
Nice.
Then let me see if it costs as much as a McLaren.
Probably. That's the secret code right there. All right. Thanks, Matt. That's a great idea.
All right. You guys have a great afternoon.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye. It's a great find. we do complain regularly about that. You know, depending on what you do, you know, my battery now that I'm living at home and not right. out and about and doing stuff, my battery can last days. But often enough, when you're out and about and doing stuff, if you got a full day out of a charge on a day you were really using your battery. That was a surprise sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, though. You can go around to most places, and you don't see folks with their heads up looking around and that. They're all always face down, looking into their hand, because that's holding the phone.
Yep.
And people walk around like that, and, you know, causing accidents and everything else.
But God forbid your phone is 2 millimeters thicker. Which would double the life of a battery in some cases.
Well, wait a minute.
Because then when you put your case on it, it's even thicker.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. They're putting these alligator cases and everything else to protect, so they when they fall, that they're not going to break or crack the screen or do this or do that.
And then my other favorite thing is the strap-on cases that you can buy for your phone that adds a giant freaking battery.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and so suddenly now your phone is an extra inch thick or what?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
I have two questions. One of them, I'm a avid Mac fan, been with Mac since Lisa. friends don't like friends drive DOS.
Right.
But anyhow, I had an Airport Extreme, Airport Express system, obviously really old. I want to upgrade. I want to go to a new mesh system. And I was just looking for some suggestions of where I might be looking, what type of manufacturer that you guys have found to be helpful, especially when you're – I don't think it's really going to matter with a Mac. But, you know, the interface I don't know if any of them have a built-in hard drive like mine does, because I kind of back up my files on that.
Some of them have USB ports where you can hang an external hard drive, but I don't know of any that have internal.
Okay. And any manufacturer that you would suggest?
Well, as we talked about earlier, the Netgear Orbi, the Linksys Velop, we've been using the Eero in our office and like them.
Oh, you do?
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. One of the things I've got to do is extend it. I want to have some function outside, probably 50, 60 feet from my actual main router. So I was looking for something that I could, be able to carry the signal that far out there.
That's, as we mentioned earlier, that's a lot in the antenna. So if you get you can get a directional antenna. Most all the routers have an omnidirectional antenna, so it spreads the signal in all directions. If you're trying to get something that far, unless you can put the router right in the window so it can point out that way, a directional antenna can help a lot, too.
All right. Well, thank you. The next question is, I have an iMac Retina 5K. It's a late 2015. Right now it's running El Capitan, and that seems to be as far as I can go. Any suggestion on how I can upgrade? What do I need to do to go on to the next operating systems?
You said it's a 2015 model? That should go higher than El Capitan.
Yeah, but for some reason it says that all my updates are up to speed.
Oh, because that's not an update, that's an upgrade.
Ah, okay.
So let me find 2015. Mid or late 2015?
Late.
It may not matter. So if you go to the App Store now, the only upgrade you'll find is Big Sur. And that may be too much, especially there's some huge program compatibility limits. It's 32-bit programs only, so if you have older programs, Microsoft Office 2011 or earlier won't work. You'd have to buy 19. So the joke is, it's the OS upgrade is free, but then you're going to spend $500 in buying software to work with it.
It's not that much of a joke.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah, and a lot depends on how much RAM you have. If you have 8 gigs of RAM, you're probably okay. If you have a solid-state hard drive, storage drive, you're probably okay. But with a spinning drive, I would probably stick with OS 10.13, which was High Sierra. You have to go to Apple's knowledge base to get the secret link.
The secret
link to download an old OS. Yeah, so if you go to the App Store, you only get the current OS, but you can download older OSs from the App Store if you get the link, and I'm going to post that in a minute here. So we always recommend have a good backup before you do anything. So in case something goes wrong, you can restore. Starting with Mojave 10.14, they changed the file system underneath. So there's radical changes in how the disks are organized. But yeah, with a 2015 iMac, you could run Big Sur, but you need to check your program compatibility. You need to check your RAM. And I probably wouldn't recommend that new an OS on that old a computer.
All right. Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Yep. Thanks. Yeah, and for those of you thinking, that's not old, it's 7 years old.
In computer, yeah. So we talk about, you know, dog years is 7 human years. Computers are like 15 years, human years per computer year.
Yeah.
All right, we got another follow-up question. Just a quick follow-up. I experimented, played around with the 5G versus the regular 2G setting on the router, and the 5G setting is almost twice as fast. The Chromebook is now up to 230 from 100. Thanks again.
Nice.
Yeah, 5G will certainly be faster. We know that. Again, depending on where it is, you may not get a good 5G signal, if at all.
And the range will be less on 5 gigahertz than 2.4.
But it is much faster. And so if your device can handle it, that speed will translate to faster downloads and stuff for you.
And actually, a neat experiment you can do at home is in your microwave, take out the rotating thingy. And put like a layer of shredded cheese on a plate and turn the microwave on so that the plate doesn't rotate. Because the reason the plate rotates is so that it can get in and out of all the wavelengths.
Right.
And you'll see melted, not melted in that 2.4 gigahertz wavelength. It's pretty neat.
It is pretty neat. All right, back to the phones. We got a couple minutes to talk to Phil from Rochester, New York. What's up, Phil?
Hi. We're talking about the Spectrum modem you talked about earlier. They increase their speed. Do you have to have a modem from Spectrum for that to occur, or can you use your own all-in-one modem?
You can use your own modem, but again, you should definitely reboot it to see if your speed has doubled.
Okay.
Some modems, the speed will double without having to reboot. But it certainly doesn't hurt to reboot it.
Yeah,
whether it's their modem or your modem.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt anyways.
It depends on what your modem's capable of. If you got an early modem, it may only do 100. So you may have to check the specs on the modem to see if it can do the higher than that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that could be the issue because I've rebooted a few times and it's still kind of slow.
Yeah, you have to, yes.
And it may not have gotten to your neighborhood yet also.
Right. They're rolling it out and it isn't everywhere yet.
Okay.
But also definitely check the specs on your modem if you've still got the manual. Always keep your manuals, but check the manual if you have it to see what the highest speed your modem will do. Some of them will not do more than 100 megabits.
Because 100
used
to be...
Which was fine when you got it.
That used to be screaming fast. We wouldn't even think of anything higher than 100.
Right. Right. But that also works the other way around. So if you've only got 100 megabit Ethernet card in your computer, it doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is, you're only going to get 100 megabits in your device.
Yeah.
And that also is true of tablets and laptops.
Which are wireless and often a lot slower than Ethernet.
Right. To start with, and then you may have only a 10 megahertz card in an old tablet.
Yep.
Or, you know, 100 megahertz card in an old tablet. So it doesn't matter how fast your network is. That's the speed you're going to get.
I'm only getting 195 on my wireless here.
Doggone it.
Even though it's an AC router capable of 1300.
Right. But that's because what's being connected.
We're at a radio station. There's a lot of
radio. That's the deal, Phil. You can get only the speed that your device will do, so check your manual.
All right. I will do that. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks. Sorry, I interrupted you.
I was going to say we're in a radio station. We're surrounded by radio waves, but we're not really because it's all hardwired to the transmitter.
It's all hardwired to the transmitter, and we're in kind of a Faraday cage. I actually looked at my wireless thing, and the only Wi-Fi in this room is from the Greece Central School District.
Yep. So
that worked out. So it's pretty cool. The you want to be aware if you have not run a Wi-Fi analyzer in your home, put one on your laptop and rather on your phone, and walk around your house and see how the signal changes and what other signals you find and what other signals disappear. It's a pretty amazing thing to see, actually, and you should definitely do that. It will open your eyes. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called and texted in. We did well last time. Please, if you haven't yet, please vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like to remind you. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening for two solid hours to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. So we're done. Be good to one another. Have fun. And we will see each and every one of you in just 166 hours.